Hello, and welcome to this edition of ICTJ's podcast series. December 16th marks 10 years since the UN General Assembly adopted the Basic Principles and Guidelines on the Right to Remedy and Reparation for Victims of Gross Violations of International Human Rights Law and International Humanitarian Law. To commemorate this important anniversary, we are speaking with Christian Correa, Senior Associate in ICTJ's Reparative Justice Program. In recent months, Christian has been working with victims of post-election violence in Cote d'Ivoire to enable them to participate in their country's reparations process. Christian, welcome.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Dan.
Great. Could you please tell us in more detail about your work with victims in Cote d'Ivoire and what you hope to achieve there?
Well, one of the challenges in any country work is to make the basic principles of the UN a workable instrument. The principles are very ambitious and concrete, but they need to be make it even more concrete to the reality of each country and the reality of each victim. So when we're discussing about massive process of reparations, some of the principles defined by the UN need to be adapted into how can you translate, for example, restitution or compensation or rehabilitation onto massive scale, and to have to get the accessibility of huge numbers of victims and not just a judicial decision for two or three. So the challenge there was how to define a reparations policy that could include the most vulnerable victims, those victims that suffer the most, and not just those victims that could have access to a court. And there were some efforts by the government there and by a truth commission that was trying to do something. But we discovered that on those efforts, the policies were not clearly prioritizing the victims of the most serious crimes, but mostly that victims were not engaged, and government was defining or trying to implement some measures without any participation of victims. And the few victims organizations that were engaged, we discovered that were disconnected with victims from rural areas, from the provinces, from the regions that were most affected. And that there were no organizations of women victims involved either. So we thought that it was important to encourage a process of dialogue where victims of those areas and victims of the most serious crimes and women organizations of victims could be included in the process of policymaking. So we started by selecting which are the areas of the country that suffered the most during the different periods of violence that Cote d'Ivoire suffered. And we identified two neighborhoods in Abidjan, the capital, and two other cities, one on the center of the country and the other on the west. And we went there and we started a process of mapping of organizations of victims. And on that process of mapping, we relied heavily on the existing organizations there. So we identified that way 225 organizations. These are grassroots organizations. And so we asked them, which are the most serious violations that people suffered here? Then which are the consequences of each one of those violations according to them? But the consequence today, so that people who suffered 5 or 10 years ago are still suffering. And which are the obstacles those people are facing daily, and making a distinction between the different categories of victims. So which are the consequences that widows are suffering, or the consequences that those who are disabled are suffering, and not just something about the past, but about the present. And from that identification, we were able to discuss with them which would be your proposals for those people to overcome the consequences and obstacles. And we work with a separate groups of women to make sure that women have their own voice, and that main organizations on those regions also listened to the position of women. So it was not just for us to get a perspective of women, but for everybody to understand that perspective. And in some cases, we also form groups of youth. And based on that, those organizations were able to make proposals that were concrete and prioritized because they were focused on the most serious violations, not in everything. And at the same time, we were working with the government, making the government sensitive to the need of consultation and showing them that we were already working with victims. So it was a kind of a bit of a pressure too. And then we organized a conference where 50 representatives of all these organizations came to the capital, and they presented their proposals, their conclusions, and very concrete ways of responding, not just the proposals of which categories of victims to prioritize, but also how to register them, which are the measures to implement, and not only payment, a single payment, or what will work as implementing mechanisms in their areas. So in this way, we were trying to translate the basic principles into action according to the opinion of the same organizations. And I have to say, I felt so encouraged by victims being able to speak so clearly, so strongly, and with even more knowledge than the knowledge that authorities had about these issues.
I want to hone in on something you mentioned, that many of the victims you were working with were from more remote, more rural areas of the country, who most likely wouldn't have had the opportunity to participate in the reparations process without this work. Can you tell us a little bit more about why it's so important to include this wide range of victims in the process?
Well, most of the violence in Cote d'Ivoire was suffered in regions that are outside the capital. There was some heavy violence in Abidjan on the last period of the conflict, on the post-electoral phase of the conflict, but most of it had been suffered in other regions. And this is a country that was for years divided in north and south. So with one group dominating the north and the other dominating the south. So reaching those regions and the area which was on the border between these two regions who suffered most of the violence was very important for addressing not only the post-electoral violence, but the conflict in its original format that lasted from 2002 to up 2006 or 5. So first, if we focused only on Abidjan, we'll be focused only on a period of the conflict and on certain categories of victims. Second, the dimensions of the conflict in the regions also have some ethnic dimensions. So the division between Muslims communities that have that had migrated two or three generations ago from other countries or from other areas of the country is a problem that is there. It's in the regions. It's not in the capital. So the tension between the autochthons and these other groups that had migrated a couple of generations ago won't be addressed the same way if it is addressed only in Abidjan. If reparations is only thought as an individual component of certain victims. So this forces you to have an approach also on the community tensions, the inter-ethnic tensions, that it is also needed for preventing future conflict.
And what has participating in the reparations process meant to the victims that you've been working with? And why is it such a meaningful experience for them, not only to one day hopefully receive reparations in some form, but to actually play an active role in the process of making those reparations and implementing them?
Part of being victims is an experience of being passive, of not being strong enough, and it's very easy that a pro-victim speech can translate into a paternalistic speech. And that's very dangerous because people are victimized as a result of their potential political role as their leadership. So part of our reparations process is to strengthen the capacity of victims to be agents. This is not just because of a question of self-dignity, but also of, in some way, trying to restore the political process or to establish conditions of a political process that is respectful of people as citizens and not just as recipients of charity. And in some way, this helps you to make a strong distinction between reparations and humanitarian assistance or solidarity or pickiness or a paternalistic approach to peace building. So there's a political importance, I think. And I think that for victims to feel that they are agents, that their voice is heard, but also that there's a common identity between an autochthone and somebody coming from a Malinke community, one of these communities that came from Burkina Faso, and that they can work together because they share something. Even if they were in the opposing sides of the conflict, but both of them lost, I don't know, a father or a son or a loved one. So both of them share a common identity of having suffered violence. I think that even can help a sense of creating a common front, creating or stressing common interest between members of conflicting communities. So I think that there's a very important political process in addition to what is the personal importance for people that could feel that their dignity is recognized.
And I was wondering if you could maybe reflect a bit personally on how your work with victims on reparations has impacted you, if in whether it's professionally or on a personal level, what it's meant to you to help these people to take this more active role.
Well, when you work in different countries, the danger of international human rights is that you begin thinking that similar solutions can be applicable everywhere. And my experience is that wherever you go, reality slaps your face and forces you to be humble. And I think that's very important because when we arrive there, we have a level of power and influence that sometimes we don't deserve. So by forcing myself and by being challenged by victims, it's a pedagogy for me in terms of forcing me to listen, forcing me to understand that the reluctance, their criticisms, the problems they raise truly need to be taken seriously, and to try to then adapt this very interesting and forthcoming and strong principles from the UN, how they need to be adapted and taken seriously. The challenge of adapting them, and not just to say, okay, let's just apply, or let's just propose a draft law that will have the principles embedded in them. No, that doesn't work. And victims are the best on telling you what might work and what might not. And at the end of the day, I see so many recommendations by truth commissions or even laws passed in countries that are defined in the capitals or are defined by a group of experts with fantastic language. And I see this in Colombia, and I see this in Kenya, I see this in Sierra Leone and everywhere. And the question is, how much of this is implemented and how much of this is implementable? Is it possible to implement? And the poor track, the poor record of implementation shows you that there's a need of being more realistic, and victims can teach you how to be realistic under those conditions.
All right, Christian Correa, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a good day.